thick. Heart of stone, my sin's my own.
From WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, this is Rick Knowlton with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, October 16th, 2025. The city of Sarasota is considering running power lines underground on St. Armand's and Lido Key. In order to fund this, the City Commission on Monday will discuss creating a special assessment district. According to documents shared ahead of the meeting, between 87 and 97% of residents and merchants in neighborhoods of the area agree to be taxed for undergrounding. Also during the meeting, the Commission will receive a presentation about the next phases of the Bay Park, including a request to use $20 million for Phase 3 projects. Rifle-carrying Sarasota County Sheriff's deputies ran through the Venice campus of State College of Florida Tuesday evening after getting an unspecified threat. The officers were seen searching around the campus after 5 p.m., the Venice Gondolier reports. A deputy on scene said they found nothing. Former Governor Charlie Crist told the Tampa Bay Times he is considering a run for mayor of St. Petersburg. The former Republican turned Democrat failed in his run for governor 3 years ago. If he decides to run, he will be up against incumbent Mayor Ken Welch. Brandi Gabbard, also a Democrat, announced her candidacy a day earlier. Florida's prisons are desperately underfunded. That's the message from the Florida Department of Corrections to a panel of state lawmakers yesterday. Department Secretary Ricky Dixon asked for more than $500 million for next year just to maintain the prison system. Though he called the amount staggering, he said it would not even include funding for salaries of correction officers, which rank among the lowest in the nation. Florida houses nearly 90,000 inmates. That number has increased by more than 10,000 in the last 4 years and is expected to rise by more than 4,000 over the next 3 years. This morning, county officials unveiled a historic marker at Whitaker Gateway Park. The Along These Shores sign celebrates the importance of Sarasota Bay for its many archaeological sites and some of Florida's earliest human inhabitants. Former Secretary County Archaeologist Steve Koski, who wrote the text, was on hand to unveil the marker, one of 80 in the county. This has been Rick Knowlton with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, October 16th, 2025.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1, LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. And programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2025-26 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. So we say thanks to Ringling College. This is our pledge week. It's fundraising week here at WSLR. We do this twice a year. Reach out to the community and ask for your support. This is your community radio station. I mean, where else are you going to get a one-hour program on stormwater management in Sarasota County and the city? That's here. And we have Steve Swah in the house. Steve is the expert in Sarasota County. He worked for the county. He's a hydrologist, created the celery fields. He actually created the water features in my old neighborhood, Turtle Rock, which was one of the reasons I really liked it and bought there. So, Steve, you're going to fill us in on what's been happening since all the... Really, we had four 100-year storms in 2024. And sitting next to Steve is John O'Miller, who's the perfect co-programmer to be having with this discussion with. So, John O'Miller, thanks so much.
It's great to join you during our membership drive, and especially nice to be here with Steve.
Absolutely. So, Steve, tell me, it's been a while since we've talked. You prepared a report for Sarasota County. You are now on the Stormwater Advisory Board. You occupy one of the city seats, representative seats, if I understand, or maybe it's just the citizen. Okay. So you're one of two representatives of, on citizen representatives. Am I right about that? On the Stormwater Advisory Board for Sarasota County?
I'm an at-large member, but I happen to live in the city.
Yeah. Okay.
There are two city,
which is great for the city, because we'll get to that. And tell me, because I know Jono had you on his show. You've done a lot. There was an October 4th meeting with the Philippi Creek community about stormwater management. Honestly, I've had my head focused on other things. But when I say we had four 100-year storms in 2024, in June, there was a storm. There was no name, but it flooded out St. Armand's, and it was, you know, definitely in the category of a 100-year storm for our Keys out by St. Armand's. And then, of course, we had Debbie, which was a deluge of rain. Milton, Helene came next, and then Milton. So we got whacked last year big time. We are really lucky this year that we haven't dealt with a storm. But Steve, for somebody who doesn't know much at all, and from your expertise, can you just talk about 2024 and what happened there? Let's start with that.
Yeah, so 2024 started off with the bang. You're right. We had two extreme rainfall events, one in June and then Debbie in early August. Helene and Milton were more storm surge events, so there was rain associated with it, but a lot of the worst flooding was associated with the storm surge. So we got it last year coming and going, both from the sky and from the Gulf of Mexico, I guess. And so it's important to distinguish between those two types of flooding, because the county stormwater program that includes the city of Sarasota, as you mentioned, is set up to address rainfall flooding, not hurricane storm surge.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Why? I'm always curious about the structure of these programs and maybe even how that came to be. Why would a county that's obviously, you know, in the path of so many hurricanes, not be set up for hurricanes, but rather, what was it you said? It's set up
rainfall.
To be rainfall.
Rainfall,
okay.
Flooding.
Yeah. Does that impact the ability of the county to be effective?
Well, they have other departments and.
Yeah, we're having a technical issue here. We have a brand new board, so I'm going to kind of. Jesse's here to. Oh, yeah. All right.
Am I on?
Now you're really on. Okay, Steve, now you're really on.
Yeah, so the county has other ways to address hurricane flooding. The stormwater program was set up to address rainfall, both water quality and flooding from rainfall.
Okay.
And as you know, the county has gotten quite a bit, the state of Florida has gotten quite a bit of money from the federal government since Ian, and maybe even going back to Irma from the federal government, FEMA. So I think they got, for example, $210 million in recovery money from the federal government for the storms last year.
Are they looking to you for advice as to how to allocate that? I hope.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I haven't been involved in that.
Has anybody, is it publicly available to be able to see where they're allocating that money?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Resilient SRQ.
Okay.
Is the name of the program that the county set up that takes that money in. They had several public meetings to take input last year. and then made presentations to the board of county commissioners, and I think they made decisions. The city of Sarasota has also weighed in. I've worked with their staff and the CCNA, the
Coalition of City Neighborhood Associations,
to submit projects that the city would like to see included in that resilience.
And what about the county organization, the CONA? Is CONA involved with that at all? Because I know Lourdes Ramirez is just starting to lead CONA again, the Council of Neighborhood Associations. I was just curious.
No,
they're not at the table yet.
Well, I don't know if they've been a functional organization up until recently.
No, I don't think so. Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They need to be there, too. But you mentioned the meeting on the 4th of October, and it's worth acknowledging the Philippi Cree Coalition.
Yeah, we need you to pull in closer, Steve, so we can really hear you.
That community along Philippi Creek is really the ones that organized that meeting. And so it was Mark Smith, Commissioner Smith, Ben Quartermain, the new stormwater director, and I on a panel. We made brief comments and then just opened it up for questions to the public. It was very well attended.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think it demonstrated, which was coincidentally one of the recommendations I made initially to the county, was they need to be engaging the community more. I've been to some of the so-called public meetings. There are Zoom meetings where somebody just talks for 20 minutes. You're on mute. They don't really open it up to questions. You have to type in questions. It's very impersonal, it's like they're just checking a box off.
Kind of a COVID hangover, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But it's very frustrating. I felt that way.
Yeah.
But the in-person meeting that was organized completely by the Philippi Creek Coalition, I think everyone felt like they, you know.
They were heard.
Yeah.
And they got to say what they needed
to say. So hopefully that's a model for the county, not just for public meetings in general, but for like neighborhood meetings for rezonings and all that, that they haven't recovered from COVID yet. They're still doing all this.
Well, it's easier for them to check a box. I mean, this is my comment. I know you're not, but there's a way, and you know, particularly when you've got somebody wanting to just get a yes, the neighborhood meeting can be, you know, if you don't really want feedback. But I think with stormwater issues, so that's been an issue for a lot of people in the county who are concerned about overdevelopment. And overdevelopment, you know, Steve, talk to us about, because obviously, so you've got the flooding in St. Armand's, and I would like to talk about St. Armand's. I mean, that just seems to me like, geez, what are you going to do about that? You know, you're on a key, you're right near the ocean. I mean, things are going to happen. We've seen major chains. Starbucks isn't out there anymore. Soma, Chico's, you know, these major Shore is no longer there because they got flooded four times. The storm surge for Milton and Helene, you know, I live on the mainland, so to speak, where I live on Golden Gate Point. I was there for one storm, just watching with Helene. I was watching the storm surge come up into our building. We were okay. But, you know, we had water in our lobby. Everybody did, pretty much. So there's St. Armand's and the reality of that storm. You've got what happened with Debbie and the flooding that happens out east, which if I were just somebody moving here, I'd think, oh, Myakka, I'm okay. I'm way out there. I'm not near the water. But there's major flooding out there. Then you've got Laurel Meadows, you know, and concerns about development next door to, like, new communities that bring in a lot of fill dirt and get built higher up. And so neighboring communities that had never really had an issue now get whacked with major flooding. So there's a lot of layers to this. And I'd like to ask you, in terms of overdevelopment, it's clear to many in the community, like, I mean, things happen. But we weren't adequately prepared, it appears. So what improvements need to happen to the stormwater infrastructure, number one, and what improvements do you think need to happen with development standards, Steve? It's a big, yeah, I know it's a big topic.
That's a lot of onion to unpeel.
Well, start wherever you want.
Well, I first of all, I agree with you on the neighborhood meetings for development proposals. They need to be more open. What I found, though, on particularly on Debbie that I looked at, and it's not that there's improvements that still should be done, but in all instances that I saw in Philippi Creek, and the flooding from Debbie was rather unique to Philippi Creek. When we had Ian, the Maca River probably saw the worst flood ever had in Northport at the downstream receiving end. So it depends on where you are, where the rainfall is, of course, and then we'll talk about storm surge in St. Armand's. That's a whole different animal. But as far as Debbie goes, what I saw when I delved into what had happened was breakdown in maintenance and operation of the existing infrastructure.
Okay.
So we have a lot of good infrastructure. It just wasn't being maintained and operated correctly. Mm-hmm. Laurel Meadows flooded not because of development, because there was a breach in a dike between it and Cowpen Slough watershed, and the flood levels on the east side of that dike in Cowpen Slough were several feet higher.
Wow.
So that dike breached and all this water gushed in, and it just swamped Laurel Meadows. It was designed for a 100-year storm, but it wasn't designed for a 100-year storm and taking in all this water from Cowpen Slough. The people down at Philippi Creek that flooded, it turns out that years of not removing sedimentation caused the flooding to be much worse than it probably should have been otherwise.
So this is basically, see, I wouldn't really think about this. Just not knowing what you know, it wouldn't occur to me as a resident that creek, to function as effective stormwater management, which, like, nature's stormwater management, right? It wouldn't occur to me that the county would have to dredge it every so often, kind of remove the silt. Is that what that is?
Yeah, but it's important to understand the history, as Jono and I were talking about at the beginning before the session here, is that that was all constructed. Philippi Creek was dredged and extended way up to way out east to Laurel Meadows in the 1920s.
It's partly man-made.
It's man-made. And so there were all these wetlands, like the celery fields, all over in Philippi Creek, and it was a big connect-the-dots puzzle. They dredged large canals to drain those areas, mainly for agriculture and some for mosquito control. And they farmed it for celery
for years.
It's called the celery fields. Mm-hmm. But over time, the muck subsided, oxidized, and they got out of agriculture, and the county wisely acquired it to hold – try to hold some of the floodwaters back again. But the point is, that was all done in the 1920s. That was the obsession, it was an obsession statewide. And it was done.
Flood management.
Dredging and draining the wetlands, the Everglades. The whole state was, and they called it land reclamation. That's what it was called. And it was incentivized by both the state and the federal government.
Land reclamation, and like the thought process was, we're going to drain it so we can build on it. Right?
We can farm it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We primarily can farm it.
Okay.
So in 1926, there was a hurricane that came into Miami. The first, almost shocked. I mean, Miami was in a boom. They had no idea. And it almost... Well, it did kind of stop things for a while, but that hurricane came across the state and dumped a lot of rain on Sarasota. There's articles from 1926 of that flood right after they dredged all these canals from the Corps of Engineers to the head of the drainage district saying, this has caused a lot of flooding downstream, a lot of sediment deposition downstream. Mm-hmm. So it was almost as much of a revelation back then. It was all just from drainage, the amount of water that's being taken off the land. There was no development, really, per se. There was maybe agriculture, but there was not all the housing development back in 1926. It still caused huge devastation and sediment transport just because
It wasn't designed to think about that. It was just designed to remove water. That was the only real
John,
priority.
John, you want to chime in?
Well, I want to use my ignorance to see if help Kathy's listeners understand what's going on with Philippi Creek. So, Steve, I have never taken a physics class, but I've been told that when you have a particle, like sand particle, that's moving in water, when the velocity of the water drops, like when the if the creek gets wider, when the velocity drops, that particle will fall out of suspension and settle on the bottom, and that it takes four times that velocity to pick that particle back up and resuspend it. So if you think about Philippi Creek, relatively narrow and channelized that they'd worked on, and then it started getting down to the more natural portions of the creek, and then that material would settle out almost like a delta. And then you have a flood. Well, that flood's got to be really powerful to scour that out again. And so the system wasn't self-scouring, and the county wasn't scouring. So as you were saying, we talked about yesterday, there were actually islands forming in the creek with vegetation on them.
Yeah, that's very good.
Okay.
And, yes, it's extremely dynamic. So sediment is always being picked up. It's always being dropped. You know, a 2-inch rainfall could deposit sediment because the velocity would be lower. But, those kind of storms we had last year really moved a lot of sediment downstream as well. But it had been accumulating for decades.
It's a lot easier to fill it than it is to dredge it energetically, like what you're saying, right? It's a dynamic system.
That's the natural, that's how physics works. And
I've
stood on the bridge at Bay of Vista at Philippi Creek just during a good rainfall event and flow, and the amount of just floatable debris that's going by every couple seconds would astound people. If the county had a way to catch that and stockpile it and make it a video, it would be an eye-opener, because that water's picking up everything in people's yards. It's washing in, and it's just taking it. And ultimately, it'll all end up in the bay.
I just want to break in a bit to thank an anonymous donor in Sarasota who has pledged $25 in support of everything on WSLR. We appreciate you. This station relies on donors to exist. And if you want to make a donation, please do. The number is 941-894-6469. Call the station at 941-894-6469. This is your local community station where we do our best to bring you very Sarasota and Bradenton stories.
And Kathy has a target she's supposed to meet for this show. So
that's true.
Yes.
I have a week, but we all have to get $500
yes.
in donations.
So if you appreciate this kind of programming that you're not going to hear anywhere else, call in and do what you can for Kathy's show, The Detail.
The Detail. Or you can go to WSLR.org and choose which shows you want to support. Make your donation there by clicking the Donate button. So, Steve, getting back to what's going on in Sarasota County, and if I'm living out east, in one of these neighborhoods, Laurel Meadows is certainly a neighborhood. They had 6 feet of water, is what I understand. Maybe that's an exaggeration.
It was more like 18 inches in their homes.
In their homes.
But it was in the street, so it might have been, three, 4 feet of water.
It was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot of water.
Way, way, way more. And if you're in a home that's been impacted, and in a way that, you were shocked, you just didn't think this was going to happen, what does the county need to do, and what do you personally need to do to safeguard your property? So as a homeowner, what can you do? Because I'm reminded of totally different natural phenomenon, but in the fires in L.A., with all these homes in the Pacific High Palisades, I guess, that were burned down, there was one that was pristine, standing, and it had followed. It was an architect had designed this home to, with all of the recommendations about wildfire proper management, no debris, and it just stood amidst a field of ruin. I don't know that that's possible with flooding, but what would a homeowner need to do And then what does the county need to do?
Well, you know, in the case of Lower Meadows, I think there was actually one home that did not flood.
Really?
And there may have been a couple, but there was at least one, and it was just built a little higher.
Okay.
And so
that's a tough call, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, to do that.
But the elevations that are established that for homes to be built to are minimum finished floor. You can go higher, but then you have to be careful about how much fill you're putting on the property and mm-hmm. what happens to your neighbor. In a master subdivision like that, it's all going into stormwater ponds, so it's probably not that big a deal to go a little higher. But okay. but that's one thing a property owner can do. The second is get flood insurance. Understand if you need flood insurance. Mm-hmm. I've talked to a lot of the people along Philippi Creek about checking their survey and sending me their elevation certificate of where their finished floor is, because that's the benchmark. And so when the county does all this cleaning mm-hmm. out of Philippi Creek, do we know it's how much of a benefit is it? Is it going to be enough to get the flood level down? And it won't be probably in many instances. A lot of those homes I've found were built in the 40s and 50s. So it was a different FEMA map.
Right?
There were no FEMA maps.
Okay.
The county didn't even really know back then how high flood levels could get. We had a flood in 1962 that got really well documented. Mm-hmm. They went out and got high water marks, and that was really in 1962 from that flood. That's when the county started saying, now we know people have to build up above these elevations that happened in 1962. The problem is there's a lot of homes built in the floodplain along Philippi Creek that were built in the 40s and 50s that were not that high.
Yeah.
So flood insurance, building up high enough. And from the county standpoint, you know, they need to keep their foot on the accelerator here. They've expedited maintenance and operation, mm-hmm. which was critical because I think they've fixed the breach in the dike, at least temporarily, and they're looking at a permanent solution. They're looking at dredging the sediment from Philippi Creek. So
we kind of need to, this is where
but don't let up. Don't let up. Just because we're, yes. I mean, I think in downtown in Sarasota, we're like 35% lower rainfall than average right now.
We've been lucky that this has been a dry summer.
And so people think, okay, well, maybe it's not that big a deal anymore.
God is merciful.
Yeah.
But so go ahead, John. You wanted to.
Well, I want to say on WSLR, we don't advocate specific products. But, when a storm's approaching, they'll say, well, we have sandbags available. And you can come down and get bags and bring your shovel and you can fill your sandbags. That is a century-old technology. They now have products that can fit in a doorway or in a garage opening that expand and will keep the water out up, I don't know, 2 or 3 feet, which in many cases is enough. Now, where I grew up, we worried about our cellars flooding. Do either of you know someone with a cellar in Sarasota?
No, but so, I grew up where there were cellars.
Right, so that's not really an issue. If you could seal your doorways and you only had to worry about water coming in through the windows, you'd be in a much better shape. So I would encourage people to look into alternatives to sandbags.
And you do it now.
Yeah.
Not 3 days before the storm.
Right.
Yeah, you have to be proactive in that way. Okay. So there really are things, but I want to come back to your point, Steve. It is critical that citizens stay informed, and what the people in the Philippi Creek Basin have done in organizing, that is exactly the kind of thing that you must do to listen. The county, their people, they have their lives, jobs, you know, they're just like everybody, and a ton of priorities, right? And so it's really engaged citizenship that keeps the focus. They work for us, you know, but we need to guide them, and that's got to be a huge priority. But if people drop the ball and think, oh, you know, there's this feeling I think people have, well, somebody's taking care of that. No, it's really incumbent upon us. Right?
Yeah, and I can't speak highly enough of that group because mm-hmm. not only have they been engaged, they've been effective.
Yeah.
The things that they advocated for, such as the county needed to form an independent stormwater program, because it was in public works, and all of the revenue coming in from stormwater was kind of intertwined in public works.
That's interesting.
And it's an enterprise fund, and it cannot be used for anything but stormwater. So getting that separated out and making that funding really transparent, and then hiring a stormwater director, an expert in stormwater, were two of the things that they advocated for, and the commissioners 5-0 ended up voting to do.
Okay.
So I've seen it time and time again. The administration was talking about raising the stormwater assessment in order to do what they're supposed to be doing already, and the people advocated against it. And I did an audit. I found there's plenty of money in stormwater if they just reprioritize what they need to be doing.
And legally, that's what they're supposed to do. But sometimes the structure and organization can make things murky.
Yeah.
You know, if you you've gotten your trim notice if you own a home or a condo in Sarasota County, and it's, you know, very educational if you haven't really studied it, to take a look at all of the things that your tax dollars go to. You know, I live in a neighborhood where we assessed ourselves to update the streetscape. And so there's a line item on our tax bill that shows we're paying down a bond. And, you know, how much of my tax bill is going to pay down that bond? And to your point, there's a stormwater line item. You see one for the school board, which is, you know, a big chunk of any county or city's budget is education, public safety. So it just gives you a really good primer, you know, to know, like, okay, where's my money going? And again, we all want to believe someone else is doing this for us, but it's so important. When there was an issue that first caught my attention in Sarasota County, and it had something to do with my son's baseball fields, you know, and I was like, who do I call about this? Who do I email? I didn't know the names of any of my county commissioners, and that's one thing I ask people. When I'm giving a talk, how many of you, these are people coming to a talk about local politics. They're not your average bear. They're already interested. I say, how many of you can name your five county commissioners? And in a room of 100 people, maybe five hands go up. I think it's getting better. What's your recommendation about engaging as an individual, Steve? Because you've been here, you've worked for the county, you've been a consultant. You've seen lots of projects. What do you recommend a citizen do?
Join your neighborhood association. There is strength in numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So this Philippi Creek Coalition is probably about a half a dozen at least subdivisions along Philippi Creek. Forest Lakes neighborhood associations.
Mm-hmm.
The CCNA is another good example in the city of all the city neighborhoods. That there must be about 30 of them, I think, that are members.
At least,
yeah. So, and they get attention. When they meet every month, the city commissioners are there, city staff, Mark Smith from the county.
Because it's votes.
It's in his district. It's votes. And
it represents.
I used to live in South Venice and served as the president of their civic association. There's 5,000. It's the largest subdivision in the county. So we put anything on letterhead to the county, we would get attention, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That, and from the county's perspective, they would much rather, it's much more efficient for them to be working with a coalition of homeowners or a large homeowner association or single homeowners than an individual.
Yes.
So you don't have to be a lone ranger.
Yes.
Get with other people, like-minded people that have the same concern and interest. And you can be pretty effective.
And you're going to meet great people.
You are, yeah.
You're going to meet great people, and it's far less exhausting. You don't want to be the lone voice because you can wind up sounding a little hysterical sometimes because you are trying to do it all by yourself. It's not the smart way to do it. Tell me about St. Armand's. I want to switch to the city now. Because of all the areas that got hit last year, four times, right? And it's a beautiful area in Sarasota. It's an economic engine. I mean, it's very popular. It's a commercial district. a big tourist commercial district that serves Lido, Longboat, and St. Armand's Key. And I wonder, like, how do you mitigate the flooding that will happen? It is going to happen.
Yeah, so let's just zero in on that a minute. So there's three cities in Sarasota County, mm-hmm. Northport, Venice, and Sarasota, and then the Tonawanda Key. The city of Sarasota is the only one that...
Well, there's Venice, too.
Is part of the stormwater utility that the county manages. So you don't get a stormwater assessment from Sarasota County on your tax bill if you live in Venice or Northport. You get it in Sarasota. There's an interlocal agreement mm-hmm. between the county and the city whereby the county is responsible for maintaining the drainage in the city. And the city residents are paying for that. Okay,
yes.
That includes St. Armand's. It includes the north part of Siesta Key that got hit really badly mm-hmm. last year mm-hmm. too. So the type of flooding that St. Armand's is especially susceptible to is a storm surge, like what happened last year. Mm-hmm. They have dodged a bullet for a decade. I remember Charlie, Ian, a lot of the storms that were coming up the west coast of Florida would have caused damage as bad or worse than what happened last year, but they turned into Charlotte Harbor, it seemed like, at the last
minute. Up the
minute,
Peace River.
And went up the middle of the state. Mm-hmm. So there's stormwater pumps in St. Armand's, but those are only good up to the point where the storm surge gets over the seawall. And the mm-hmm. seawall, I think, is only at elevation 3.5 or something. Oh. And it's a bowl from that in. So once that gets over the seawall, you can't pump against the Gulf of Mexico anymore.
Yeah.
You are pretty much totally
vulnerable
unless you have some kind of, you know, special flood protection as John was talking about.
So the merchants need to be cognizant of the updated technology.
They probably
would be
some of the primary beneficiaries of that technology.
Okay.
But to be honest with you, and it's not just storm surge. Sea level rise is the third type of flooding that's the most innocuous. I mean, it is constantly coming up, and it's never going to stop.
Let me tell you, you know, so I live right on the bay and walk Bayfront Park all the time. And the level, the high tide level, I've lived there for 22 years. The high tide level is so much higher now than it used to be. I mean, when there's this little slip of shoreline that is along John Ringling Causeway between Golden Gate Point and the roundabout. And when that's high tide, we're talking like maybe it's 6 inches below the sidewalk. It's high. I mean, maybe it's 8 inches, but it didn't used to be that way.
And it's not going down anytime.
No, it's not going down.
You know, a decade from now, it'll be several inches higher.
It'll be more.
The projections show that in 2035, due to some lunar alignment, it's going to start increasing, accelerating how fast it comes up.
Really?
Yeah. So we have time. But if we don't, if community don't get on it before, you know, in the next decade or so, it's mm-hmm. going to be really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Once that level gets up to elevation four, it's because now your streets are pretty much all underwater. So the state of Florida, people are surprised. The state of Florida actually passed legislation several years ago that incentivized really communities to develop a resiliency plan for sea level rise and hurricane and flooding. And the incentive is if you create a plan, and they're using the NOAA projections for mm-hmm. sea level rise.
Is NOAA still getting federal money? That's another show.
That's
but,
yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
But yeah, they update the projections periodically.
And what's the acronym so people know? NOAA is the
National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
They're the ones that keep track of these trends.
Yeah. And there's... The gauge that they use is up in St. Petersburg that's been mm-hmm. there a long time. That's pretty much the one for this region that they track on how what's happening. But they've projected, and the further you go out in the future, the more uncertain it becomes. Okay, so they've got a high, a medium, an intermediate, and an intermediate lower. So they got like four different mm-hmm. projections based upon, you know, what might happen.
Yeah.
But in all cases, it's never going down. And areas like St. Armand's, I've done resiliency plans for the city of Holmes Beach, Eckerd College, which is right on the water. I think the city of Sarasota has done a really thorough one. Mm-hmm. But those are telling you basically in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years what's likely to be the elevation of the sea level. And if you have infrastructure, you have to inventory your transportation system, your energy system, your communication system, your critical building system, and determine what it should be protected for, both in frequency and the probability of high-low projection.
It's quite a complex task.
Yeah, but that's the start. You have to understand what's going to be happening in the future and what your infrastructure is going to be need to be at to adapt to that. And it's pretty daunting as you get out in time.
Yeah. So with St. Armand's, they need to have a higher seawall, don't they?
Well, they...
Okay, John, I'm going to ask you to...
Well, go ahead, John.
Well, you could put in a higher seawall, but people forget that when you have a storm, the water's rising in the bay just as much as in the Gulf. And so you could have a 20-foot wall out at the beach, and it's still going to flood. But what I wanted to ask Steve is, are we still having an issue with... tide water coming up through the storm sewer system and flooding St. Armand's from the bay when we have a high tide event?
I think they have tide valves on the outfall pipes.
Okay.
So I'm going to chime in because I was sitting next to a couple at a dinner, and they had moved from Anna Maria Island to Osprey. And what they told me was they said there was a king tide that came in on Anna Maria and just came. And I didn't know what that was, so I want you to explain what that was. And it just came rolling down the street, and they were like, we got to get out of here. No storm, nothing.
It's sunny day flooding, we call it.
Yeah. Okay, what is that?
Well, it's the tide comes up on a sunny day. And so you have flooding. There's no rain.
But it's not happening all the time.
No.
Why is it different?
Well, it's the alignment of the moon, and it's an astronomical phenomenon. And
the gravity of the moon is what
it's a bunch of stuff, water sloshing around. And so they're predictable. And
they are.
We used to have people used to have a photo campaign where you would take pictures of your dock underwater and send it in. I don't know if they're still doing that.
So if you look on any day of the year, you can look at what the tide levels are going to be. Usually there's a couple low. There's low tide, low tide, high tide, high tide. Mm-hmm. But even that is dynamic through the year. And I think usually in the spring is when the alignment of the moon.
Okay, so I don't
make it even. That's when you get the king high tides.
Okay,
when
so I'm going to break in. Everybody, you are listening to WSLR, and this is our pledge drive. We do two pledge drives, one in the fall and one in the spring, and we need your help. Everybody here, we are we're mainly volunteers, and the radio station exists to serve the community. The number here is 941-894-6469, 941-894-6469. You can do a monthly donation and become part of our community that way. You can do a one-time donation. Any way you want to donate helps the station and gives you the kind of programming, local information, music, the Fogartyville Entertainment, which is awesome. If you haven't checked out Fogartyville, there's live music like practically every weekend, super talented people. And the performers love it here because people are really there to hear them. It's an awesome way to meet other people here in Sarasota. And like I said, it's all because of support from people like you. So please go to WSLR.org. You can click the donate button there, or you can call us at 941-894-6469. And with me today, if you just joined us, is Steve Swaw, and John O'Miller is joining me, a fellow programmer. Steve is a hydrologist. He has lived in Sarasota County for decades. He's worked for the county. He designed the celery fields. We couldn't be more fortunate, I mean, to have an expert like Steve who can guide us through, along with the great people of the county working on stormwater management, to guide us through these really serious challenges that we as a community just have to face. So, Steve, we've been talking about St. Armand's. Just to wrap it up, what do they do? I mean, I talked about a higher seawall, but John brought the point up, like, yeah, but the bay, you know, that may really maybe that's not enough. What do they need to do?
I'm a stormwater engineer. This is a whole different thing. I got to tell you, if I were them,
yeah,
and you're not going to like this.
I think I know what you're going to say.
They need to know what's coming.
Yeah.
What happened last year from storm surge could be happening every day or a lot during the year from just sea level rise in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, I would start with a clean slate of paper and plan mm-hmm. for the future. But understand mm-hmm. what's coming, because you can recover and rebuild from the storm that mm-hmm. happened last year, but it's coming again.
It's going to happen.
And it's going to be coming more and more prolonged from sea level rise when that starts happening.
Yeah.
Once, like I said, once sea level gets up to elevation 4, most of these bigger islands are going to be in a lot of trouble because all their streets are below that. So the homes are built up high.
When you say bigger islands, you're talking Longboat.
Barrier islands. Yeah, all the Anna Maria, all our keys, Siesta.
Yeah.
The roads are not that high. The homes, if they're built to the hurricane standard, they're built
high.
But you're going to look out and you're going to see all the roads are flooded.
But if you've got a little bungalow from 1930, yeah. whatever, you're...
Yeah, so the one thing that I think last year opened my eyes, it's hard to predict the future, but here's a sad reality is I think that old Florida is going to disappear.
Yeah.
Because those homes that were built in the 50s and 60s and the tiki huts, they're going to be gone. And they can't rebuild because of the 50% rule that they have to build up to the standard. So the property may still be of value.
And you'd be throwing your money out the window
just to build
the same way.
Yeah. So they'll have to build up to the new standard. Some of them will sell their land because the land may still have value. But whoever mm-hmm. comes in will have to build up to the new standard. But as a result, what we're used to seeing with
it's
the older is going to disappear.
Yeah, yeah. So you, for to my friend Virginia, go photograph now.
Yeah.
You know, like to get, it's a historic record of what we've got. Tell me about, you know, living in the city, and there was litigation I think it was in the 90s, about dual taxation. When you live in a city, whether it's Northport, Venice, Longboat, or the city of Sarasota, we are taxed twice. We pay for our municipality and we pay to the county. And there was a lawsuit a number of years ago where the city sued the county because they felt like the county taxes that we pay were not coming back to the city. And so they came to an agreement about parks, but also stormwater management. Now, that agreement actually sunsetted, and which is why the city took back management of the parks, and I think a lot of our park money went to the rowing facility. So city taxpayers are now paying for most of our parks. There's some that the county, I think Ted Sperling Park at the end of Lido, the county still manages. But stormwater management is still something that the county fully funds, but they've been making noise about giving it back to the city, which as a city resident, that is a very complex responsibility. And I frankly want the county to keep ownership of that. But if it's coming back, it has to be done really carefully. What are your thoughts on, you know, that whole question of municipalities? Well, you said earlier.
Well, on the stormwater in particular,
yeah.
I think number one, anytime you can manage stormwater across jurisdictional boundaries, that's a win.
Okay.
You should strive for that.
Okay.
And to terminate that agreement would, in my opinion, have been failure on part of the county to do that. They wisely decided not to terminate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard a number of commissioners say, listen, this is a decision for another time, but to the city of Sarasota, we need to get our house in order. We need to make sure the system is maintained. That includes the system in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to make sure that's done before we have another discussion about that. We're not going to give the city a bad bill of goods where, you know, the system's
not being... It's going to be fully functioning and maintained.
Yeah. And then we may have that discussion again.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully... they can, there may need to be some renegotiations of that agreement. There may be some legitimate concerns the county has about maybe taking on all. This sea level rise in particular, if local government takes that on, it will bankrupt them, in my opinion. There is no way that the public sector can address that natural phenomenon that's coming.
You know, so many people in the United States live on the coast. There's really good information out there, articles that have appeared. I forget one of them that I saw, which just showed, like, in the past 50 or 60 years, the population drift to the coastlines. I love the water. I was born near the water. My family heritage is near the water. Like, I remember living in Texas, and just, it was beautiful. But the San Antonio River is like nothing, you know. And I thought, oh my gosh, these people can't drive to the beach. So I get, and I'm that person that wants to live near the beach, even just to look at it. I don't, my Irish skin, I don't go out there very much. But what do we need to do as a country? As a society, because a lot of people, the insurance industry gets this, right? And so we're building very expensive places in very vulnerable places. And it's not just here, it's all over. I know that's a big question, but what does our country have to do to grapple with the reality that's coming with flooding and sea level rise?
Well, if you can figure out Florida, you can figure out the rest of the country, because we are more susceptible than anywhere else in terms of coastline and elevation. And fortunately, there is high ground in Sarasota County.
Yes, yeah.
And there are standards in Sarasota, well, relatively speaking.
Well, let's talk about that, and we're talking about the city. Yeah. We are so blessed in the city. We have so much elevation. If you drive down Boulevard of the Arts, I'm not saying you'll get a nosebleed or your ears will pop.
But for Florida,
it's significant. And there are places west of the trail that are 20 feet in elevation. You go down to Englewood and ask someone to find something 20 feet in elevation, it's not going to happen. Mm. So that led to people wanting to settle,
which is why
in Sarasota, right, because it was high and it was going to be less affected.
Yeah.
Two problems. One, it was settled early, so there was no stormwater system put in place. And two, that steep slope sends water much more rapidly to the bay. Mm. So you combine no system built and the fact that it's entering the bay, so we have a water quality issue. But before we go, Kathy, I just want to remind your listeners, they're not going to find programming elsewhere that you're providing. You're doing this as a volunteer. Last week you had John Schuessler on. Mm-hmm. People may or may not care about New College, but they probably care about the airport. This guy is an expert, and he's fearless. You had Kelly Franklin, another fearless advocate. Come on, she's willing to say what she thinks. You've had Carrie Seidman. You have all sorts of great people that are expertise, and you're not going to hear that anywhere else. So people need to call in and support Kathy's show, The Detail. And whether you call in or do it online, you need to go down and make sure she's actually getting credit for your contribution.
Thanks, Jono. And that number is 941-894-6469, 941-894-6469, or you can go to wslr.org, click the donate button, and please do choose The Detail to support the show. We have a few minutes left. It's actually exciting to me because it's right in front of us. You're so right, Steve. Florida can lead on this. We are uniquely vulnerable, but we're positioned to lead in solutions and smart solutions. And to Jono's point, we have to be looking at the topography of our area and focus residential development on high ground, right? Places where it's going to be safer regarding flooding. But
there may be a way to incentivize to work with the private sector.
Yes.
To help transition people out of low areas for density credits.
Let me tell you something. Andrew Georgiadis, who's another expert who's so awesome, I always say, you know, you can't be a prophet in your own hometown. But we've got in Andrew Georgiadis a true expert when it comes to urbanism and how to develop mixed use in beautiful, smart ways. But he pointed out to me years ago, he said, you know the 10th Street Publix? He said, do you see what they did with their parking lot? For those of you who've never been up this way, Publix believes in sea level rise because they elevated their parking. You have to drive up, and it's right. It's the only Publix that has a waterfront view. And I like going there because I can look out on the bay. But private sector, the insurance industry gets this. So, we want to have an ongoing conversation with you, Steve, about what's happening and how we as a community can be ahead of this as best we can. But I wanted to end on a number of years back, Steve Long, who is a local realtor and, again, somebody engaged in the community, he showed me a map in the city of Sarasota of all of the tributaries, all of the waterways. So many of them had been covered over. And what he was saying is, you know, and as my brother visited recently, and as he was flying over Florida, he's like, my gosh, it's all water, isn't it? I said, yeah, you know, it, and it's the beauty of where we live and all the wildlife and everything associated with the water. How could we enhance those tributaries? How could we, you know, there was an old initiative out east, the Fruitville Initiative, where they were imagining kayak waterways mixed in with urban-style development. That didn't happen. But we could do something like this in the city of Sarasota, and that would be exciting. And it could also help this problem. So you're shaking your head yes. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it's called daylighting the waterways again, and there's a movement on that because they realize that number one, water tends to be an identifier for urban areas, the bay or the river that goes through, or you mentioned San Antonio, the river that they work around there,
the river walk.
It becomes a common public space in a meaningful way as opposed to private. And so trying to bring that waterway, like down at Marina Jacks.
Yes.
The city conscientious, I think, brought that back into public ownership years ago. So,
and people love it.
But yes, absolutely. But doing that even through neighborhoods and waterways and enhancing those. I lived in South Venice, and people would go out on a Saturday morning, believe it or not, put on hip waders and go and clean out the ditch. And the reason they did it was because they would see a return on that investment within days in terms of wildlife coming back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, frogs and ducks and birds and even crabs coming up from Alligator Creek.
Yeah.
It was filled with muck and debris, and they would clean it out. And before you knew it, there's a sandy bottom, and the water's meandering through it, and it's clear, and the wildlife comes back.
That's awesome. Like the celery fields. Yeah. On a huge scale.
Yes,
If you know nothing else about Steve, you need to know that he designed the celery fields, and he designed the plan to bring it back to its natural state of being a wetland and stormwater management. And now we have a nationally renowned birding site that I enjoy. I know so many people enjoy. So we could do that sort of thing within the city of Sarasota, and that would be phenomenal for us. So anyway, Steve, I want to thank you for joining us. Everybody, you've been, and thank you, John O'Miller.
Well,
thank you so much for joining me, too.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1, LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. I'm going to ask you all, please support this show and this radio station. This is your community radio station, WSLR in Fogartyville, and we're here to serve you with information you won't get anywhere else and incredible musical talent at Fogartyville. It's an amazing listening room, dance place. If you haven't gone, check it out on WSLR.org, see what's happening at Fogartyville. You can support us at any level. You can do a monthly contribution, however you choose, but without you, we wouldn't be here. So please call us at 941-894-6469. That's 941-894-6469. Or go to WSLR.org and click that donate button. Thank you so much for being here. Stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.